We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, June 10 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports as we help you pick up the pieces from an interesting and ultimately disappointing baseball weekend. Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D., and you got a three-hour full Monty edition of B2BS coming at you on 103.7 The Game. Going right in on LSU baseball, what I thought the storyline was, what it could have been, and ultimately, well, how it ended up. We'll be taking your phone calls as well. You want to talk LSU baseball, voice some of your disappointment, get your thoughts out on now the season that was, and reflect. Today's your opportunity to do that. And I'm going to give you today. Because tomorrow, football season truly begins on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But today, yeah, I'll let you cry a tear or two in your beer. Let's talk together. 706-0111. 6-4 loss on Saturday. Tigers led 4-0. Should have been a lot more. 5-4 loss in 12 innings last night. Tigers this time around couldn't find a way to keep plugging leaks in the dam with a deplenished bullpen. And here's what I meant earlier. What I thought the storyline was two pitchers. I thought the whole thing was about Cole Henry, Landon Marceau. I think what we learn and what this weekend very easily could have been about, an unbelievable storyline coming out of the Baton Rouge Super Regional, Todd Peterson and Devin Fontenot. A little bit more so, Fontenot and his almost near heroics last night at the box. But of course, what we know now is the storyline is inability to hold a lead. Some mind-numbing decisions, chief amongst them. Gio DiGiacomo getting picked off at third base. And I think the one that most people will point toward, pitching to the opponent's best hitter. And a guy that was swept up early in last week's MLB draft, and allowing him to decide things. And Florida State ultimately earned exactly what it got. A surprise trip to Omaha. They blasted their way. The Seminoles did through Athens. They had to take a different tact. It took some more strings being pulled on the sideline. And as many will probably suggest to you, I won't completely disagree with them, Mineri and LSU's team kind of fell on their own sword. And eventually, if you let them make enough mistakes, you can walk out of a hollowed ground like Alec Box with a ticket to Omaha. But let me zero in on the could have been part, because just work with me for a second. Cole Henry leaves after two innings. Paul says after the game that he could tell after one inning wasn't going right. And so this confidence move, right? It was a confidence move to have the kid pitch game two in regional play, coming back from an injury. And it was an even bigger confidence play saying, you're our guy right away in the first tilt. And that's the one most people are always going for in super regional play. LSU didn't want to hold anything back. Best foot forward. Boom. Two innings. Everything goes out the window. And you have to completely redirect. Todd Peterson comes in and was fantastic. 4 1/3 innings. Probably could have left him in longer, gave up only the three hits, and he was saddled with two earned runs, but truth be told, Trent Vitmeyer let those runs across. And the combination of Vitmeyer, Fontenot on Saturday, Hess, and then Hilliard, they just weren't ready for what Florida State had planned late in that ballgame. And LSU's, you know, much-vaunted bullpen, again, fall on the sword is a pretty good term. But Todd Peterson absolutely rescued what looked like a lost cause after Cole Henry went out that early. And yes, LSU had a lead from 2-0 to 3-0 to 4-0, somewhere in between. Saul Garza doesn't step on second base, and you let at least one more run go off the board. Seminoles were giving errors out, like Oprah and Free Stuff on her show. It was crazy. And still, LSU had Todd Peterson get them to a spot where they probably should have won that game. And in a lot of different ways and in different moments on Saturday, they didn't. The even more heroic performance was Devin Fontenot yesterday. And everything Mike Martin had to say about the young man, everything Paul Maneri said on Fontenot's performance, take it, multiply it. But I'll let you hear what his teammate had to say exactly about the young man. Josh Smith, the second-round pick of the New York Yankees, he knows excellence and on the biggest stage when he sees it.
Yeah, Devin competed as much as he could. He did everything he could. It's one of the best relief performances I've ever seen a kid give. He's competed like that all year. He struggled at times, but for him to come in and do that just kind of tells you what kind of kid he is and honestly just what kind of team this is. Credit them, but Devin was awesome tonight, and it was awesome to play in front of a crowd like that. Just tough. We came up a little bit short.
6 1/3 innings, and ultimately his only hit surrendered was the game-winning single in the bottom of the 12th. So incredible, frankly. I mean, absolutely incredible what Devin Fontenot did. And he was a part of that patchwork late relief effort on Saturday. But what he did on Sunday, I'll agree with Paul Maneri. We would have been discussing that for 15-plus years had LSU got the win. They didn't. The season's over, and I'm sure there's a lot of disappointment on your end. We got time to hear about it again today. A guest coming up on the other side of this break, so get your calls in while you can. 706-0111. I thought it was about two freshman starters, Henry and Marceau. This thing could have been about Peterson and Fontenot, and going forward in Baton Rouge and in South Louisiana, it will be about promise not fulfilled and in Tallahassee. And I think a lot of reporters that will be following that team going up to Omaha, it's going to be about a potential club of destiny. Mike Martin's group, they look like they're ready to be fitted for a certain glass slipper, in my opinion. But crazy the way baseball plays out. And we've been talking about this team almost day to day since, what, Valentine's Day? Here we are, 10th of June, and it comes to an end. CD said before the season he thought getting to Omaha would have been a measure of success. I said getting to Omaha and then advancing through the tournament would have been a level of success. What they did was fall short of both of those marks. And I'm sure for a lot of people, getting to the final 16, playing regionals and supers at home will be nice, but maybe not quite good enough. Certainly not what people wanted. We got plenty of time. In hour number one, we're going to be chock full of LSU baseball talk. In fact, we're going to BR on the other side of this break. Jacques Doucet, WAFB-TV, not just LSU baseball. I'll get him to reflect on the LSU calendar year that was. JD, our only scheduled guest in hour number one. Ruffin Rodri, quick hitter, coming at you at 5:15. Going to New Orleans, Andrew Lopez, NOAA.com, the Times-Picayune, the latest on trading Anthony Davis at 6, and a Q&A replay, RP3 with Les Miles at 6:30. Big show today, taking you all the way to 7, so don't go anywhere. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Back in, ready to keep the LSU baseball talk going. In fact, we're going to go to BR and catch up with JD. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game. Quickly, out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline. He is a sports anchor, reporter for WAFB-TV, and one of Acadiana's finest, Jacques Doucet. Welcome back, Jacques. How are you?
Hey, Ben. How are you, man?
Things are okay here on the other side of the basin. Did the sun come up this morning?
Yeah, it sure did. Sun came up here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. A lot of disappointed LSU baseball fans here today. high expectations as usual for this team, especially considering who was coming back and the recruiting class they had. But, you know, two very competitive, highly dramatic baseball games. Last night's game, to have 11,700 paid on a Sunday night, and pretty much everyone their seats to the very end. And it just it get away from LSU in a four-hour affair. Tremendous games, but LSU, if I could channel Jim Moore from 1987, way too much coulda, shoulda, woulda over the weekend for the Tigers.
Perfectly said. I let off talking about what could have been, and on a weekend where I thought it was going to be about a couple of freshman arms, right? Cole Henry, Landon Marceau. This could have been a pretty terrific tale about Todd Peterson and David Fontenot back-to-back days in relief, especially Fontenot. I'll get you to remark on that performance and compare it maybe to anything you've seen at the box.
Yeah, well, you know, big storyline going into the weekend was that LSU was going with two true freshmen as their first two starters. You know, Cole Henry has to leave after two innings, and then Landon Marceau only goes a little bit more than three. So you get less than six innings from your two starters. That's not what you're looking for, obviously. Todd Peterson was fantastic in relief. One of the worst things about them losing, Ben, the first game, we couldn't joke with him about fielding that chopper where he fell down and threw it the first. It just wasn't the right time and place to talk to him, unfortunately. But yeah, he did a great job. And then, you know, yesterday, Devin Fontenot, you know, he was really good in the SEC tournament. I think he had an outing where he went four shutout innings. And then yesterday, it was remarkable to see how he was feeding off the crowd. The crowd was feeding off of him. Just the way he just kept dealing and dealing. And obviously, you cannot put the loss on him. I mean, LSU was the visiting team yesterday, so I just had the feeling the more LSU kept sending Florida State to the bottom half of the inning and giving the Seminoles a chance to end the game with one swing of the bat, eventually it was going to happen, and that's what happened to LSU as they lost in 12 innings.
Talking LSU baseball with Jacques Doucet, WAFB-TV. How will you remember this 2019 season?
It's bad that human beings are wired to remember things that go wrong. Certainly, for better or worse, Giovanni DiGiacomo getting picked off at third base. I mean, that's going to be a play that I'm going to remember from this weekend. Saul Garza not touching second base in the first game. Just a lot of those kind of mistakes that I'm going to remember. I'm going to remember Paul Maneri with his arm around Acadiana's own Antoine Duplantis, who, you know, was in tears in the game. LSU, after the game, LSU's all-time leader in hits, the consummate collegiate athlete, student athlete. You know, just everyone just rant and raved about him after the game. Mike Martin, Florida State's legendary coach, called him a beautiful player and just everything you want in a baseball player. I'll remember that, certainly. We made the trip to Texas early in the year to cover that three-game series, and I guess that was kind of the first sign of trouble when they got swept by the Longhorns in the cold that maybe this team wasn't going to live up to being number one in the country. They did some good things, but at the end of the day, they were disappointments in midweek games and just having trouble playing up to their potential. At the end of the day, they got a super regional in their backyard, which is all you wanted. But, you know, Mike Martin's going to go to Omaha for the 17th time, and a preseason number one in LSU is not going to be there.
JD, let's discuss both of these coaches, and we'll go with Mike Martin first. Do you now kind of get the vibe that this is, and I hate this phrase, but, I mean, something akin to a team of destiny? Do you feel like this is a team that, for whatever reason, they're just going to keep rolling even as they make it to Omaha now?
Yeah, Ben, it's funny the way things work out. You know, in 2002, Mike Martin had, like, perhaps his best team ever, you could say. They won 60 games. They won, like, 25 in a row. They were easily the number one team in the country. Notre Dame and head coach Paul Maneri go over to Tallahassee, and they win that super regional, and they don't go to Omaha. And this year, you know, Florida State, a lot of people think they're not going to make the NCAA tournament, period. I think their RPI was something like 90 or something like that in April. And they get in as a three seed and then go to Georgia and bash them in a couple of games with the number four overall seed in the tournament, and then come here to Baton Rouge and win two games in front of 11,000 screaming LSU fans. So Yeah, I think there's, I mean, you could say that Team of Destiny stuff and all that. It's funny that both of the coaches in the game are Hall of Famers, and then both of them and their fan bases, you know, I saw tweets from Florida State fans, you know, I've had a lot of issue with Mike Horton about this and that, but I'm happy for him that he's going to the College World Series. You know, we hear about, well, Coach Mannering hasn't won a national championship in 10 years. Hey, Mike Martin's been there 40 years and hasn't won one. You know, it's hard. So it's interesting. Ben, I've been doing a lot of thinking lately about what it's like to be Paul Mannering. You know, to much is given, much is expected. You think about LSU basketball, they go to the Sweet 16 this year, everyone throws a parade, everyone's just thrilled. LSU baseball, in essence, goes to their eighth Sweet 16 in 12 years, and people shrug and say, well, so what? You're supposed to do that, you know. So those are the expectations of the job at LSU. I think Coach Mannering knew what he was signing up for, but still sometimes he's got to be like, man, are you kidding me, you know.
I don't know that I could have asked a question to get a better answer. I wanted to ask you about Mannering next, but I think you just covered it. Ultimately, is it going to be good enough to be really, really good, borderline elite at LSU and not knock down that door again? It's hard for me to imagine him kind of getting the Les Miles treatment on the way out. I don't think they're in the same camp, but I know a lot of LSU fans do.
Yeah, Ben, you and I both have spent a lot of time with Paul Mannering and Les Miles. We can agree that they're very different people. Right. I mean,
sure.
You could look on paper, and there are similarities in the fact that they both won a national championship at LSU in their third year. They both played for a national championship after that and lost. And we'll see where it goes from here. I've had people point out, well, they both got big contracts from Joe Oliva after the fact. Are they getting, you know, did they get complacent? Are they getting fat and happy? LSU's got a new AD now, and Scott Woodward, and it's going to be very interesting to see how he views things. So he's going to bring – will he bring Coach Mannering in and say, look, love this Sean Ochenko kid, but we need to get a premier hitting coach. Or Alan Dunn, who everyone loves, what's going on with all the arm injuries? And I mean, are these just kids that are soft and aren't, you know, playing through a little pain, or is what LSU's coaching – hurting arms? I don't know, but obviously with all their arm injuries this year, that was a big issue. You know, Coach Mannering before the year told me, I think he'd like to coach until he's 65. I think he wants to coach another four seasons or so. He's always been one of my favorite people. He's great with the media. You know that. You know, he's the most polite guy in the world. He'll apologize to you for missing a phone call or not getting back with you soon enough or whatever. He's always been perhaps the most accommodating coach I've ever covered at LSU in almost 20 years. So, I'll admit I do like the guy, but I do understand some of the fan criticism and frustration about some of the things that go on with the team.
Coming down the stretch, Jacques Doucet, WAFB, is our guest. All right, take those 20 years of experience that you just told us about and put this academic calendar year in perspective. How successful was it for LSU as an athletic department?
Well, I got off to a roaring start, and two teams that typically would have finished it out in Omaha didn't do it, and that would be LSU baseball and LSU softball. Beth Tarina went to the College World Series three straight years and four out of her first six, and they haven't been able to make it the last couple of years. And, Coach Paul Mannering played for a national championship, I guess you would say now, two seasons or three seasons ago, and hasn't made it back since 2017, the summer of 2017. So overall, finishing football, a lot of people thought was going to be a disaster. To finish number six in the country and win their biggest bowl game, their biggest bowl victory since the national championship win against Ohio State in 2007, that was huge. Will Wade and company going to the Sweet 16 without Will Wade, that was a lot of fun, and to win the SEC regular season title, so that was tremendous. Women's basketball is not pulling their weight. We all know that. And Nikki Fargus could be going into her last year. Gymnastics was the national runner-up, again, under Dee Dee Brough. Can't really complain about that a whole lot. So, I talked about baseball and softball. So overall, I mean, I have to give the athletic programs a B+. If softball and baseball could have made it to the World Series, I would have given them an A.
I like the grade. Got about 90 seconds left. JD, tell us about the Red Rocket Blue softball tournament coming to Baton Rouge in late June. And then you're going to chase that mid-July with the celebrity, sort of celebrity softball game.
Yeah, Ben, anybody out there that's got a slow-pitch softball team, you play in all those tournaments at Pelican Park or wherever, this is a great tournament to get back to Louisiana military men and women. They'll be here in Baton Rouge June 28th through the 30th. It's a three-game guarantee. All the money goes to Louisiana Military Charities. You can register at redrockandblue.com, co-ed, men's, whatever. And then we'll have a big celebrity softball game July 12th at LSU Tiger Park where LSU plays softball with a ton of former LSU football players, basketball players, baseball players, and they'll do autographs and take pictures. And that'll, like I said, be July the 12th at LSU Tiger Park, and we'll put tickets on sale for that soon.
Jacques, it's always great to run you down. Thanks for doing it the day after another late night. But I guess that's the only kind you know when you cover LSU sports, right?
It's been kind of a long athletic year, hasn't it? With all these crazy, I mean, the Saints NFC Championship game with all that no call, the LSU Texas A&M football game with the seven overtimes, some of these baseball games lately, including that 17-inning game in Hoover. We've seen some stuff this year. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, you sound like a veteran there. We've seen things. There's no question. And I promise you this, when you blink, it's going to be SEC Media Days, and we're going to do it all over again.
Hey, I'll be ready. So will you.
No doubt about it. Thank you, Jacques.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Love it. About a B+. It's what this year felt like for him. What did it feel like for you? We'll take your calls on the other side, plus your sink or swim question of the day. I've actually got two for you. One about LSU, one about FSU. We want to hear from you when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station,
and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Three SEC teams have punched tickets to Omaha, and one more, well, they're going to have to get in. Because right now, two of them are playing each other. We'll update what's going on in Super Regional action and take your phone calls, too. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben and Clint taking you home on 103.7 The Game. And earlier today, Auburn continued a little bit like Florida State, kind of a sneaky good postseason that not a lot of people saw coming. Auburn, the fifth team from the SEC West to get into the field of 64, beat UNC, final score 14-6. And so Auburn has advanced to the College World Series, where they will take on Mississippi State in their very first game. The other SEC team that's already punched the ticket, Vandy, took one on the chin Friday night against Duke, but then they stormed back and won two in a row against the Blue Devils. Vandy and Louisville will match up in a first-round game. From TD Ameritrade, Michigan and Texas Tech are going to be locked in for a game, and Florida State will await the winner of Arkansas and Ole Miss. I believe those two on the diamond in Fayetteville right now.
Yeah, they're in there right now, and currently Arkansas is putting a whooping up on them, 7-1, so the Hogs could be going back to Omaha for the second straight year.
Omaha Hogs, and they were awfully close last year. As Clint said, they lead by 6 right now in the fourth. We'll continue to monitor and tell you as the show goes on. Now, today, we've got not one but two sink or swim questions. We've only posted one to social media. We like to keep that one real simple. Here's an option. Here's another option. Click one. But I'm going to give you a second that's only for the program, and it's going to be, I think, a little more meaningful for call-ins. So let's get to the music, and then I'll get to both questions.
Exciting and new.
First, the question that transcends platforms. Sink or swim part one. Will Florida State go on to win the 2019 College World Series? That whole idea of Team of Destiny. Are they playing that way? Are you buying into it? Clint's got an interesting factoid he'll share with you in a moment. But will Florida State go on to win the 2019 CWS? Here's part two. and this is only for the call-ins, what's the most disappointing thing for you in this LSU baseball season? Call us up, answer one, answer both. But we got about 40 minutes before Ruffin Rodri comes aboard. It's time for you to participate. 706-0111. Clint, hit us.
All right, first off, you brought up the fact I have a fun factoid. Well, I do, because you got to think about the fact LSU's been eliminated by the eventual national champ the last 3 years. Now, of course, 2017, it's kind of like, yeah, you did, because you lost in the national title game with Florida. Last year, it was Oregon State. 2016, in case people don't remember that, Coastal Carolina. So the last 3 years, the team that beat LSU has become the national champ. So it's almost safe to say that it feels like Mike Martin's going to wind up going out on top and winning his first ever national title. That'd be just a great way to kind of send off the veteran.
It will be the story in Omaha. I'm going to say that they do not win. So I am going to sink here. What I will also tell you, him seeking out Devin Fontenot after that ball game last night, telling him that he pitched like a warrior, that he was a warrior, that's the good stuff about sports. That was awesome. And so tip of the cap and respect to Mike Martin. Stories like this sometimes are rewarded, but I don't know, after watching that Florida State team, as much respect as I have for them, I don't know if that team is going to have the pitching to get to and through Omaha. Crazier things have absolutely happened. Mississippi State has almost had arms fall off in years past and made it to and a good bit through Omaha. So I'll almost begrudgingly sink here. I'm going to say that they make a little bit of noise, that they get a whole lot of pub, and they'll be the darlings of the field. But I don't think they win in Omaha, so I'm going to sink. All right, let's get out now. So the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, first caller of the day. Jim, welcome aboard.
Hey, how y'all doing? No, I don't think FSU's going to make it. I've just seen Arkansas, and like you said, the other teams, they're just less playing some great ball. And as far as what's my biggest disappointment for the year, Tuesday nights. Everybody's got to say that. Tuesday nights were just terrible. That put them against the wall, you know, as far as that goes. I think one of the most amazing things of the whole season was that relief last night. I was just watching inning after inning. I just couldn't believe this guy. I mean, I can compare him to the guy who was sitting right behind him waiting to come up, you know, Hess to come up behind him, and he just kept throwing. And if you look at that pitch to strike ratio, he was up there. I mean, there was an incredible job he did.
Devin Fontenot. I appreciate it, Jim. Devin Fontenot did something last night that should be remembered for a long time. Doesn't often go down that way in losses. So Jim says his most disappointing thing for this season is Tuesday nights. I'll tease mine briefly, maybe a little more depth later. Pitching fatigue. And I think there may be several different reasons why. We had Ron aboard. CD, we still got him or no?
I hit the call drive. That may be him calling back now.
All right. Ron, anybody else, give us a holler. 706-0111. My problem is I don't know if we have a similar situation to what the kids in football are doing when they're juniors and they're eligible and they protect themselves by sitting out. I don't know if that's what's happening, but the simple fact that it could be is disconcerting. I am not doubting the genuine nature of these arm injuries, but again, if this is making sure that you're going to be okay on the back end and so you don't remotely push your limits, boy, that's a lot different than Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey sitting out a bowl game. If kids are tucking it in mid-season, and this is something that usually wasn't done prior, pitchers of not just earlier generations, but, you know, like earlier this decade seasons would have gone, that's disconcerting for me. I don't know the answer either. Jacques Doucet said, I don't know what's causing this. Hey, look, I don't profess to either. We've had some really good guests on the show take their stabs. To me, most notably, Ronnie Rance. But that's the most disappointing thing. And it led you to a spot last night that in recruiting a certain way where you didn't have a lefty arm to save your life because you didn't have a lefty arm, period. All right, let's get back to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, thank you for calling back. The floor is yours.
Thanks for taking the call, Ben. Yeah, I'm like everybody. I'm a little disappointed. We did have indications of this team throughout the season. I don't know if we disregarded it. We were on Palmer for a while. Nobody should be calling for his job, but we questioned our effort our team played with, you know, and we had some injuries. And you know, as anybody else knows, you know, you have to have some luck to get yourself in championship games.
Yes.
A little bit of luck have to come with, you know. LSU did put yourself in position to play in Omaha, you know, but, you know, it takes some luck. And it goes back to me like 2011. Alabama played LSU in the last championship game, and it got in the game, and they were sitting at their house. Oregon and Kansas State lost on the same side, and it put them in a game, just like when we won our last championship game, Pitt beat West Virginia. We're sitting at home. So you have to have some luck, too. So a little disappointment, but it did put themselves in position to go to Omaha. You know?
No, there's no question. And they played a lot of bonus baseball at home. Thank you, Ron.
Yeah.
And look, you talk about luck. Doesn't always happen for you just because you think it should. And that's not going to make anybody feel better on this day. Not my job to do that either. My job is to tell you the truth. And the truth is the number one overall seed, UCLA, they're not playing this coming week either. They got beat by Michigan. Not exactly a known baseball power and entity. Texas Tech went into Oklahoma State. And again, that was a what and what type of series, right? Two teams that were fairly evenly matched. But still, just because you get a super regional on your terms in your building doesn't mean you're going to win. All right, back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Mitch, thanks for calling. What you got for us?
Hey, guys. Enjoyed the show. Listen, we've got to get better offensively. If you look at all the statistics in the past few years, we have just got to get better offensively. And when you look at the statistics of the teams that go and win the tournament, win the College World Series, there's run scoring, and it's significant. So we've got to get better at scoring runs.
And consistently. I'm right there with you. Mitch brings up a good point, and we appreciate the call, Mitch. I said on Friday I had a gut feeling LSU was going to have to find ways to keep up offensively with what Florida State was bringing in from Athens, which, you know, think back 4 days ago, it was a juggernaut. They crushed people up in Northeast Georgia. But I thought that might come back down to earth a little bit. I said LSU's going to have to find ways to score maybe in that 6-8 run range. Look, I'm no soothsayer. LSU scored 4 runs on Saturday. They scored 4 runs on Sunday. And they lost. And I go back all the time to what Tony Robichaux talks about, eliminating the big inning, not giving up the 3-run-plus inning. That's the backbreaker. And so offensively, that's one thing LSU in the heyday runs of Skip Bertman did so well. Those 1 or 2 run innings, maybe of modern day, could absolutely snowball on opponents. And at the box, I mean, that was a death sentence. For LSU to only carry a 4-0 lead into the latter stages of that game Saturday was criminal. And you're not going to have me lay that strictly at the feet of Palmieri. Can't do it. Won't do it. Mike Singletary style, brother. I'll suggest to you that they had some brain farts that had nothing to do with him. Saul Garza missing second base being one of them. But they were the beneficiaries of some goodwill as well. I mean, some real clown show type of errors. I could think of one in center field. Miscommunication between the center fielder and the second baseman. LSU had a window that was open to make that about a 6 or 7 run lead. Then the ball game completely changes. All right, we're going to take our final break of the hour. We got more time for you to go in on LSU baseball, your thoughts for the future. And I do want to introduce tonight's Game 5 in the NBA Finals. So that and more on the other side. You're listening to Bumper Sports, coming right back in on 103.7 The Game.
To the show.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at
1037 The Game.
Whatever is happening on the floor, if it's going well, we stay with that. If it's not, we make quick decisions and we move forward. And we might, you know, rotate guys in and out quickly. We might get them 30 seconds rest here if that's what it takes. But, you know, all hands on deck and we got everybody ready to go physically, mentally, whatever it takes to win the game, that's what we'll do.
Steve Kerr, all hands on deck for Golden State. They got to go up to Toronto tonight, and could a dynasty be crumbling in front of us? We'll get to the NBA Finals Game 5 shortly. as Bumper to Bumper Sports returns on 103.7 The Game. But if they're calling, hey, man, we're going to keep taking them. Let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Ben is with us and wants to talk some LSU baseball. Sweet name, Ben. How's it going?
Pretty good, man. Hey, Ben, I feel like LSU lost that intimidation factor at the box this year. When you watch the midweek games, the Louisiana schools that came in, they used to just put the fear into the other teams. And I felt like people came into the box this year and didn't have that same intimidation factor that they usually have year in and year out coming into the box. What do you think?
It's a really good point. And I believe it's one Ryan Terrio made pretty emphatically on Baton Rouge Radio about a month ago. Ben, we appreciate the call. I'm going to go in on that. I buy it, but I don't think it's the sole reason that LSU in some ways, has tapered off. But I do understand the lack of appeal when you're 5-5 against in-state schools in the midweek. I get that. It's not fun for anybody. Yes, LSU lost a couple of those away from the box, including a game to the Cajuns in Metairie. But they didn't exactly defend home field at the box this year for midweek games. And that is just one of the most beaten into the ground, like a dead horse subjects in all of South Louisiana sports talk. I don't care if it's this show, if it's TV, message boards, Twitter, at a local bar, CD, wherever else you may find people who talk sports, midweek games is a lot of times over-discussed and analyzed. Yeah. But I do think there's a way to let off the gas competitively in those situations that may tide over into weekends.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest thing. Is like we're just seeing them lose. The way they've been losing those midweek games, I feel like, is the more disconcerting part, where it kind of just it bleeds over into that weekend, because I feel like this team just didn't have that switch to where, like, Skip Burtman talked about a lot back in the day, was the fact that he used to have a little mini toilet
flush
in
it.
The dugout and flush the commode. Like, you need to be able to try and do that every time you wind up losing, just get over it. And
they
get
certainly
ready
got
the
practice
game.
At losing in the midweek.
Exactly.
Games.
That's
they
what
certainly
I'm saying.
Got practice there, but I do think this LSU baseball, to Ben's point, won a lot of games before they started, and that is gone. And part of it is because there's better talent and parity. But the other part of it is what's going on internally with LSU. I think that's what Ben means. I think it's what Ryan Terrio meant. Where's the damn juice? Where is that extra bravado and that swagger that when teams came in, they knew it was going to be a long night? Maybe able to drag out a dub, but it's not going to be gifted to you. And the other thing is this. If midweek games are going to be used more for target practice than for winning as the sole purpose, then you got to at least develop arms to make that a worthwhile venture for me. Wasn't exactly what they were able to do this year. Many times they ramped back up injured arms in situations like that. So what is it then? A controlled scrimmage with 3,000 people? All right. What are you accomplishing there? Is iron sharpening iron before you then have to go on the road and play at Texas, at Arkansas, and, you know, wherever, at Florida? And I would suggest that sometimes that's where there's the disconnect. And that's maybe where some of that juice is lacking, where some of that mojo isn't where it used to be. All right, back out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Steven, thanks for the dial. What's on your mind?
It's about kind of some of the controversial calls in that LSU-Florida State game, that game two. I don't know if you – I just got off work, so I don't know if y'all talked about them yet, but there's one in inning four where Palmieri didn't know the rules of baseball.
Woo, woo, woo.
Bye, Felicia.
Woo, woo, woo.
I don't know if Clint was fast enough there. Frankly, I think he got you to the draw. If this were take 10 paces, turn and draw.
Oh, he got me.
You might have gotten bloodied there, sir.
Oh, trust me.
I don't know if it was fatal, but you got wetted up a little.
Oh, trust me. I think he nailed it right there. That was one guy past the goalie, and it's been a while.
You know, you've told me before that you think it's one person.
That's my conspiracy theory.
No, it's like the opposite of conspiracy theory. I'm the guy who thinks it's multiple people. So I occasionally call up to Pittsburgh, see if Alan Michael will co-sign that ride in the black helicopter. Yeah. But for me, no, they're organized. I mean, absolutely. And they will strike when they think you have fallen asleep.
Exactly.
So,
well,
he knew that you weren't up on the trigger finger there, because it's been a few weeks, maybe a few months even.
It's been at least 6 months, I feel like. maybe the last time we had football in our lives was the last time this has happened.
And by the way, for those just now tuning in, I did say that off top in this show. Hit me with whatever you got on LSU baseball, except for maybe the rules of the game. I think we've covered that. But hit me with whatever you got on LSU baseball. Get it out of your damn system today. This show will allow you to do that. But I got news for you. Tomorrow, 4 p.m., it's on like Donkey Kong. Football season 2019 starts tomorrow on this show, June 11th. Am I going to start breaking down LSU Bama? No. I have a life. But we will talk a lot of football. LSU, UL, Saints, and start to get down on the prep side as well. Football season officially starts tomorrow. Your reaction to LSU baseball can continue today, and our preview of Game 5 of the NBA Finals will commence at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. We see you up there in Toronto. We are the North, trying to defend and bring home a pretty unlikely NBA championship. We'll get to that momentarily. I want to wind down hour one with a final word that maybe you didn't expect.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Thanks. And with the news today, Mondo Duplantis, Lafayette High's own LSU record-setting freshman pole vaulter, Mondo wrote a letter to LSU fans announcing his intentions to turn pro. He has already qualified to compete for Sweden in the 2020 Olympics and the World Championships, and he intends to go pro and prepare for those events. And so what I'm saying is something I hardly ever do at this time of year or any time where kids forego eligibility. I'm saying thanks, and I think you should as well. To be treated to at least 1 year of what Mondo gave people is worthy of our admiration, in my opinion. I know that we don't often talk about kids in that sport, in that event, going pro. That's exactly the point. We never talk about it because nobody's been this prolific before. He was a shooting star that you were lucky to get for a year in the purple and gold. So what I say today is thanks, Mondo. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. Coming right back in, more B2BS on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And oh yeah, that would make this Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Two more hours until the finish line. We'll have interviews coming at you. Ruffin Rodri in 15 minutes. Andrew Lopez at straight up 6 o'clock. And a Q&A replay. RP3 with Les Miles at 6:30. We spent basically the entirety of hour one on LSU baseball. You want to double back? You're just getting in the vehicle, joining the party? Feel free. We've taken a lot of calls. We'll take more. 706-0111. Sink or swim part one today. Will Florida State go on to win? The CWS, you can tell us your thoughts there. Part two, what's the most disappointing thing for you in this LSU baseball season? So the table's still there and open for you to get something to eat on the LSU baseball front. But we haven't talked hardly at all about the NBA. I wanted to get into the finals, so we will. And I also wanted to get to the latest with Anthony Davis from the team side, what David Griffin is doing. But according to CD in the break, well, there's some news about the player himself talking about Anthony Davis.
Yeah, this is coming from Shans Charania of The Athletic and also Stadium. He's saying that sources are saying Anthony Davis has focused on the Lakers and the Knicks as the two desired long-term destinations, which makes you wonder, will he wind up going to those spots, or will it be a lot like what we've seen with Kawhi Leonard, where they drop him off at another spot for that 1 year, then he can decide what he wants to do after that?
Yeah, cool story, AD. Hope it happens for you in 2020-2021. Couldn't care less. And guess who else couldn't either? David Griffin. Trajan Langdon. The guy's making this decision. If you get to where you want to go, fine. But that ain't our problem. The prerogative, as it comes to new ownership, or excuse me, new management for the Pels, is finding the best potential suitors. And interesting news along those lines today. You know, CD, I'm not sure this is quite a Woj bomb that was detonated, but Adrian Wojnarowski of the Mothership did divulge the following. David Griffin, executive VP of basketball for the franchise, he has started to provide potential suitors with the framework he is seeking in a trade for AD. This includes multi-team trades. How about that? According to Woj, his report indicates the teams that are most likely in the mix, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Knicks, and the Nets. And that brings us back to Friday. The Nets discarded Allen Crabbe, a wing player, and a few other draft picks, moved some things around. The Nets look to be doing some jockeying for position. Is it to get just Kyrie Irving? Not sure, but that seems like it's the hottest rumor going right now in the league. Is it to get Kyrie and AD? We're going to find out. Now, another tidbit from that Woj mini-bomb. The Celtics could be in the running still, but the Kyrie Irving situation looms very, very large. There's no timetable. But it seems as if David Griffin prefers that this deal gets done before June 20th. Thank the big guy upstairs. And I know that's coming soon. 9.5 days from now, in fact, would be the deadline. This thing, I believe, is going to get real dicey real quickly. June 20th, of course, is a week from Thursday. It is the 2019 NBA draft date. And I think this deal needs to get done before then. I think the Pels need a direction with not only the number one pick, but hopefully other first-round picks, or at least another first-round pick this year. Now, another interesting note on the Pels front, CD, I'm sure you saw this as well, and it was made official within the last 20 minutes. They have hired Swin Cash. And, yeah, you recognize the name. She was an All-American at UConn. She has been hired as a senior front office position. Most recently, Swin has been a director of franchise development with the New York Liberty since retiring from the WNBA in 2016. She currently has no experience in a front office role in the NBA. But they're doing some forward thinking. And so now the group includes one of the best young up-and-coming GMs that has been made the executive VP, that's David Griffin. Another of the best up-and-coming GMs who actually was made the GM in Trajan Langdon. Both guys that interviewed for the big job. Interesting. It's a group that includes a very reputable, maybe even the best, training staff in the association that came over from Phoenix. And now they're bringing over someone who has franchise development experience on the WNBA side. I'm not going to hate on it. They're continuing to build a cachet in New Orleans.
They really are. And kind of to update that, it's going to be a front office position as the vice president of basketball operations / team development. This according to the release that the Pelicans put out about 15 minutes ago.
Now, the other bit of news that Sham Sarania of The Athletic and Stadium TV has put on the wire, the Pels and projected number one overall pick Zion Williamson will meet this week. Good, because as I said, the NBA draft is a week from Thursday. Staying on the hardwood and going over to the NBA Finals, pretty surprising result for my money on Friday night. And it's got the Dubs in an all-time bind. They're down 3-1. Series returns to Toronto tonight. Could be a closeout game at home. Vegas sees it that way. Raptors installed as 1.5-point favorites. As the show started, I checked back in on it. The line is down to 1. Maybe, just maybe, that's been influenced by late news. Within the last few hours, we've learned Kevin Durant plans to play tonight north of the border against Toronto. So I cannot imagine that he's going to be terribly effective. Maybe you just get a bit of a Willis Reed charge from the guy, and that in and of itself could be enough. But it's hard for me to imagine Kevin Durant coming in and being a game breaker on his own. It is good to see him giving it a go. And let's be clear about one thing. There's a lot at stake for him beyond just this season. So it's kind of the opposite. It's something we just discussed with what appears to be going on with LSU baseball. People protecting arms, protecting a future. In some ways, it seems that could be at the root of some of the arm fatigue and extended sitting that we saw this year. KD doing the opposite, and I'll salute him for this. I'll respect it. He could lay down and try to protect free agency value. He's getting out there, and hey, whichever way it goes, at least he's going to be putting it on the line first time this series that he'll be doing so. All right, we got Ruff and Rodriguez set about 4 or 5 minutes from now. You're listening to Hour 2 of B2BS. We're brought to you today in large part by Relief Windows. And when you think windows, doors, and siding in Acadiana, think Relief Windows. And look, you've always got a lifetime glass breakage warranty. Huge. We get it. It's the summer. People are mowing grass. Rocks shoot everywhere. People are playing baseball. If a rock hits and breaks your window, if a baseball does the same, well, your window, that sash is going to be replaced at no charge. So free estimates, lifetime warranties, just part of the game at Relief Windows. Give them a call today in Acadiana, 337-456-1699. All right, we're coming back, bringing the big guy with us. Had a lot of fun Friday, chopping it up with Ruff and Rodriguez. Quick hitter edition when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
Let's go, people.
Come on back to me.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
It's quarter after five. It's a Monday. You hear that music and you just get a little lighter, a little happier. At least I do. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. And our pleasure to bring back on Ruff and Rodriguez, owner of Rufino's on the River. Well, since the last time I saw you, Ruff, it didn't go well for the home team at the box, but those were some wildly competitive baseball games.
Man, I tell you, that's what a great I mean, for two losses, and I know a lot of people are upset with different moves and blunders and this and that. But I tell you, man, it's I don't know if I've ever been in the box when it was that loud, that exciting during two losses. It was really. I mean, you left exhausted. You know, 2-4.5, whatever our games, and then. But you know, not going to Omaha is upsetting. But it's also this team. You know, at one point in the season, we didn't even expect them to even get a home field playoff berth or a tournament berth. So I think they overachieved for what I saw this year.
What impressed you the most about Devin Fontenot yesterday?
Oh, man, I tell you, when you get – Mike Martin said it best, I'll take two of them. I thought that was great. You know, call him a warrior. It just – you know, you he was the obvious. I'd like to meet his parents. Well-raised, just, you know, one of those kids just does it the right way, goes to work every day and just works hard. Kind of like Alex Bregman type, just that attitude of – never quitting and just giving it your all, and you know, just the Jacob Hester, you know, just throwback. And it was so much fun to watch, especially striking out the kid that showboated.
Did you get any yelling out of your box? You told me that you had a couple of prime targets for regional play, especially I think against Southern Miss. Did you find anybody over the weekend?
Wait, what's that?
You said you had a couple of kids that you had some fun targeting during the regionals. You find anybody for supers?
Oh, no. I was a little. This was so. There were so many people at this weekend. You know, the regionals. It was crowded, but it wasn't. Man, I don't know if I've ever seen a super regional like this. This was a packed house. I mean, every seat was taken. Everybody was standing. Everybody, you know, it was so. It was kind of hard. It was so loud you couldn't really. There wasn't any quiet spots like there was for Southern Miss. Really, really a strange deal. It was loud the entire time.
Talking shop with our man Ruffin Rodrigue on 103.7 The Game. I had Jacques Doucet on earlier today, and I asked him to look at this entire academic calendar year, and he graded it out maybe about a B-plus for LSU. Said some areas of just tremendous success, a couple of other places, softball, baseball, that maybe didn't get where they wanted to go. How would you look back at this whole thing?
I mean, you know, I think it was one of those years where, you know, obviously, you know, your athletic director stepped down and you replaced him because of some controversy, obviously, with the basketball. So, I mean, basketball was such a big hit, and then all of a sudden you get the big downer with the investigation. You know, obviously football makes up more than half of a grade or whatever you want to give. And I'm telling you, Ben, because I'm involved with the program a little bit and know what's going on and listen to the insiders. This coaching staff is doing all the right things. They've embraced the other colleges. They've embraced the Raging Cajuns. They've embraced Southeastern. They're working together, and they're all going to be better for it. They're all getting great classes because of it. So when you know if Billy and Ed are working together, they can solidify the state. And there's so much talent in Louisiana. I've been saying this for years. These schools shouldn't be jealous of each other. They should work together. Louisiana is so rich in talent. You know, probably the most talent of per capita of any state by far. With LSU always having the most NFL players for years. And so I see what's going on, and I'm telling you, this is I'd give it more of an A because I know the future with Scott Woodward is just going to be spectacular. He's about as good as they get with his passion for LSU and his smarts and his wit with PR and all the stuff that we blundered in the past with Les Miles and Will Wade and all that. So I'm excited for the future.
I'll let you fan the flames a little bit about this 2019 season, Ruffin. It's interesting because LSU hosting Bama hasn't been a terribly competitive game. We know that the last two or three times in Death Valley. But there are two primo matchups this year inside Tiger Stadium, Florida and Texas A&M. Does one get your blood boiling maybe a little bit more than the other?
Florida. I mean, well, when I played at Florida, they had, you know, it was just, you know, they put the students right behind you, and I'm just not a big fan. I have a lot of friends that are Florida fans that we have parties, we share parties with when we go to trips at each place. But it's something about the jorts and the attitude of the Florida, the typical Florida student or fan just kind of always got under my skin a little bit. And, that's always a special game when they come into Baton Rouge, especially if we haven't had them in, what, two years?
Yeah.
And, you know, the last time we had them, it was during that storm or whatever happened. And it's just, you know, it's a big rivalry. You know, I know a lot of people don't like it because we have to, but I can tell you, it's ever since when I was there in the 80s, we were, you know, against Emmitt Smith and all the great players. It's always been special.
Where do you weigh in on, I guess, the mode of scheduling in the SEC these days? Because a lot of people picking on Alabama's schedule, I think rightfully so, outside of the conference. LSU, we know, is playing at Austin. Other than that, Ruffin, it's fairly slim pickings, though. So I'm sure you have a lot of different angles you look at this, not only as a former player and a fan, but also as a restaurateur and business owner in Baton Rouge. What do you make out of it?
Yeah, I mean, we want the big games. We want a game that, you know, when we get Texas here, it's going to be enormous. But, you know, going there, it hurts business, but it's a big, huge weekend. If I rattled off in my 3 years starting at LSU, you know, Notre Dame, Florida State, A&M when they were out of conference, Ohio State, USC, you know, Miami of Florida. That's where we played, Ben, out of conference. North Carolina. I mean, the list goes on. In 3 or 4 years, I marked my 4 years there. that was the out-of-conference games we played. So I'm a little biased. Tulane was the one, and they played so hard. It was always a tough game that we looked at as a win or whatever. But you know, we struggled in '87, which was one of our best teams. So, you know, we played all those teams. I'm big on competition, but who wants to schedule Alabama? You know, with teams are you know, a home and home with them is big for their budget, but it's, you know, it's basically an 0-2 deal with the
two losses in 2 years. You know? Yeah,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're not. Let's face it. I mean, they're the number one recruiting class every single year. They get the best of the best. They get the best quarterbacks. They get the, you know, and that's where I think Ed Ogeron really comes in, because that's his goal, is to get that premier quarterback, get him in place behind really, really talented offensive and defensive linemen, so we can compete with the Alabamas. And I thought last year we had him in a good place, and you know, I thought we overhyped the game. I thought the kids were way too overhyped, and I think this year it'll be less jitters on the road, as you saw 2 years ago, which we got a chance to actually win it. And
roughing a day game this year too, I think that's going to help.
Yeah, you know, anything change, any kind of change like that always helps. We actually, when I was there, we weren't known for day games, and then all of a sudden we started winning a lot of day games on the road. In fact, under Coach Armsparker, we were undefeated on the road for these years here, and it was because of the preparation, the attitude, and all that. And I think Coach Ogeron really gets that. And you know, to be a great coach, it's like a Coach Saban and Coach at Clemson, and it's an attitude of listening to people and knowing when to make changes and when you're doing the right thing. It's like running a business. You know, if Nick Saban wasn't a head coach, he'd be a CEO for a Fortune 500 company, because he knows how to work a process, how to run a business, and that's exactly what you need as a head coach.
Ruff, I got to tell you, before we let you go, Friday was awesome, and it's a great example of what happens at Rufino's on the River, not just for the reservations, not just at 7:30, 8 p.m. That place was rolling at about 5:30.
Yeah, it was special. Especially night. You know, Thursday, the big flood, the rain in Baton Rouge, out of the 750 homes in my neighborhood, I'm the first house since 1985, since that neighborhood was built, first house ever to actually flood. Oh. So I'm going to be displaced. I'm going to be displaced for a little while. This is, you know, I look at everything as a gift from God. So I don't really, I'm like a Devin Fondo when it comes to these kind of things. Man, when we flooded in Lafayette 3 years ago in the bar, I was just looking, you know, thanking God that we didn't flood the whole restaurant. So, but Friday was great. Rufino's is really special. You know, Ben, and it's not only Rufino's, it's Lafayette, it's Acadiana. The people, the employees I have, they embraced, you know, they knew my house had flooded, and I walked in, and they were just so thankful to see me and you and the whole deal. And they made me a cake with, you know, "We love you, Mr. Rockman," and all this stuff. It was really a special night Friday to get down there. And if it wasn't for my wife, I would definitely live in Lafayette, but my wife's family's in Baton Rouge, so I lose that battle.
A surrogate son. Come whenever you need, man. We love having you here, and I look forward to getting back there on Friday.
Sounds good, man.
That's Ruffin Rodger. You got it, man. And look, this was maybe the fifth, sixth consecutive Friday, and there have been a couple of good crowds. There have been some certain groups that have come out that listen to this show. That was just a great mixture. People who knew we were there, people that were there with their wife didn't know, but they're like, "Oh, this is great." And they come pull up a table next to the show. That's what it's all about, and happy to do our part in celebrating some life on Fridays over at Rufino's on the River. All right, quick break. When we return, going to throw a little shade, try to transition from everything we just discussed to Max Muncy and Mad Bum, Madison Bumgarner. You will like this. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
We had questions. Let's get to some of your answers. Then we're throwing some shade. Bumper to Bumper Sports back in on 103.7 The Game. You want to participate? We'll be your Huckleberry. 706-0111. But speaking of said participation, Clint, we asked a question. We posted it. Let's get the response from Twitter and Facebook. Our sink or swim question today: will Florida State go on to win the 2019 College World Series?
And Twitter is definitely all abuzz, saying 67% are sinking in this one, 33% swim. They're definitely not a big fan of the Seminoles making it all the way.
Facebook, I know we have a couple of responses as well. And I think, again, there may be a little shade toward the Noles.
Oh, there really is. When you look at Wes Anderson, Wes A., no, I'm not. I'm
trying
a fan.
To get people fired again. Give it full names. Got people listening.
And I'm
during
trying
work.
To avoid doing that, and I did it anyways. Wes A. Anyways, no, I'm a fan, but no. Too many Fontenots in Omaha. We had a great ride to Omaha, but I'm afraid it'll end after two. Very Jekyll and Hyde team. And then Peter D. Put it simple. 2-Q, which for those who don't know, that's 0-2 getting out after two games. Not exactly a big fan of Florida State, I can tell.
I do think Mike Martin made some more fans in South Louisiana. In particular, with the way he sought after Devin Fontenot after last night's ball game and that heroic performance, some of the things he had to say to him, and it's something you could see now, right? Michael Bonnet, amongst others, has some video and some pictures of that moment. Really, really cool. So I think Mike Martin has made some fans in this area, but at least those responding on social media, not so much. Smooth transition for people who are throwing shade at Florida State to whatever the hell it is Max Muncy did to Madison Bumgarner over the weekend. I'm excited to get here. Here's your daily reminder first. No one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the Cypress accents. And know that you can trust in their management, top down, starting with Mark, to sit down, create a vision, and then fulfill it. They can get it done before football season, but yeah, you better hurry. It's already the middle of June. So scamper now to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
The Dodgers beat the Giants in game 67 of the regular season. Who cares, right? Well, a lot of people, not just those on the Bay in SoCal with this heated baseball rivalry, but I think that there's a lot of care on the part of Max Muncy, young Mahler for the Dodgers, and an old school bruiser of a pitcher in Madison Bumgarner, a guy with a lot of World Series experience and success. Over the weekend, Muncy pulverized, and I mean hammered, an offering from Bumgarner 426 feet into McCovey Cove, but it's what he had to say after the game that qualifies for this segment.
You know, I hit the ball, and then he yelled at me. He said, "Don't watch the ball, you run." And I just responded back, if you don't want me to watch the ball, you can go get it out of the ocean.
If you don't want it, go get it out of the ocean. Go hang out with the guys and the gals that have the canoes. Go paddle your ass over to the baseball and get it if you don't want me doing what I did. So an extended bat flip, a nice little stare down of Madison Bumgarner, and then some words after. Boy, I don't know if I'd want to stand in that batter's box the next time Muncy is set to face Mad Bum.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Go fetch it out of the ocean, old man. I love that for Max Muncy. It's like the opposite of get off my lawn. Let's get out now to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Bob, thanks for allowing that detour. You want to talk LSU?
Yeah, I'd like to talk some LSU baseball. I mean, I hear everybody talk about now that the year's over, okay, we're going to fire Maneri. Well, you know, that's not going to happen, but I damn sure hope, guarantee it, that he makes some changes, because this past year I just saw a lot of things this year that I didn't see in years past. And I think as hitters, they took way too many pitches. They were very passive at the plate, not aggressive at the plate. And I don't think hitters don't like to take the bat out of their hands. And I don't know who's telling them to take from the bench, because it seemed like every time, instead of being aggressive at the plate, they were all up there taking one strike. Because, you know, when they step out after that one strike and look to the third base coach, now what the hell you want me to do? And they get another sign. So I just hope they're more aggressive at the plate next year. I don't even know who the hell their hitting coach is, even if they have one. Same thing with the pitching staff. You know, hey, you throw five pitches? Okay, how many can you throw for strikes? Throw three. Those are your pitchers. Throw them for strikes. And if not, at least throw them where they can put the damn ball in play.
Yeah, you know, sometimes that works. I like your point about the hitting, but I'll say this, Bob. Sometimes throw your pitch and let them put into play and let the chips fall where they may. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Case in point, Trent Vitmeyer on Saturday throwing about umpteen straight fastballs to the kid who eventually goat rope one over the wall for a three-run homer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see that many fastballs in a row, and they're calling those from the dugout.
That felt pretty predictable. I mean, that outcome felt very predictable to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you're going to be throwing just nothing but fastballs, well, then you know what? You need to work. And if that's the only pitch that you can get over the plate, then you shouldn't be on the mound.
Yeah.
You know, you really shouldn't be on the mound, because if that's the only pitch that you could throw for a strike, you're not gonna make it much farther than SEC play or A ball.
No, I'm with you. And Bob, we got to hit a break here in a sec. I appreciate the call. I agree with your overall premise. Assistants and coordinators will always fall on the sword before the head coach. That's the order of things. I agree with you. That's what's coming. And to answer your question, I think maybe technically, Sean Ochinco would classify as the hitting coach, but the reality is things haven't been right there since Andy Cannizzaro left for Mississippi State. And what a sordid road he has had. Now a high school baseball coach, I believe at Holy Cross in the New Orleans area. But you can track the downturn in UL baseball to Matt Deggs leaving for a head job at Sam Houston. Fact. Not saying it's the sole reason that Cajun's baseball is now fairly mediocre in Sunbelt play. And that's a fair word, given the last couple of years. I'm not throwing post shade here. That's fair. They're not hitting anywhere near the degree they did when Deggs was in town. And LSU, for as many plaudits as Alan Dunn gets, they don't have the equivalent to him for the hitting side. And I understand there are many who don't like Dunn. Within the sound of my voice, too, I get that. You just can't convince me to be in your camp on this one. Interesting conversation. And, Bob, I think you're right. Some change is coming to the staff of Paul Maneri. All right, we'll take our final break of the hour. We can keep going in on LSU baseball. Got time for some more calls at 706-0111. I want to introduce some Astros-related things as well. So we'll do that. And then Andrew Lopez talking Pels and NBA Finals at 6 o'clock. You're dialed in to Bumper Sports, and we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Iron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in. We'll get a little more basketball heavy in hour number three. Andrew Lopez coming aboard at 6 o'clock. Clint taking you under the dome, NBA Finals style, to end the program. But for this segment, to close out hour two, just a couple of diamond dudes. Let's stick with baseball. Bumper to Bumper Sports, back in on 103.7 The Game. Seven teams, including Florida State, obviously, have punched a ticket to Omaha. CD, there's one game that's still pending. Arkansas, Ole Miss from Fayetteville. Thing is, I'm not sure it's much of a game.
It's not much of a game, and I guess it's true what they say in the SEC. It just means more runs. 14-1, Arkansas is just thrashing Ole Miss in the seventh inning. Just, my goodness, I was surprised to see the score get inflated like it was.
Full on Jordy Holberg for us.
Yes.
There. Thanks for the my goodness. All right, so we now have seven that are in and one on the verge in Arkansas. Let me give you the matchups, and we'll break it down by conference. I'll get your reaction to this as well. Michigan, Texas Tech, they're going to play one another. Both won away from home in super regional play. Michigan took down the number one overall seed, UCLA, Joe Robinson Stadium, over on the left coast. So Michigan, Texas Tech, they're playing one another. Florida State is awaiting the winner of Arkansas, Ole Miss. Sounds like it'll be Arky. Vandy will play Louisville. And Mississippi State will play Auburn, an all-SEC affair, to open up their run into and potentially through the 2019 CWS. Here's your breakdown by conference, and it doesn't matter who wins the Arkansas-Ole Miss game. The SEC is guaranteed 4 of the 8 entrants in Omaha. The ACC, with Louisville and, let's see here, ACC with Louisville and Florida State. Yep. We'll have 2. Big Ten will have 1. And the Big 12 will have 1 in Texas Tech. What an academic calendar year it's been for Texas Tech, which almost won a boys' basketball championship.
They have been phenomenal all year long. We talked about it with Jacques Doucet at 4:15 about what grade he would give LSU. I mean, I think we could definitely wind up probably giving Texas Tech probably a B+, A-, based off of their academic year.
And what they've done is not just get to things like the Sweet 16 or the Round of 16. They're kind of punching through a bit of a glass ceiling that athletic department seemed to have for a while in Lubbock, Texas. All right, we said on the other side of our break we wanted to get into the Stros. Let's do that. And Yordan Alvarez getting the call up and then going yard ball in the second inning yesterday. I mean, how high did that rank for you on your scale of Astros excitement?
That was amazing because, like, the second I saw him getting called up on Saturday night, I was like, oh, God, what is going to happen now? This guy was absolutely just tearing through AAA. It's like he was just like, guys, let me into the big show, and I will show you what I can wind up doing. Second at bat, and this dude just crushes one right into, I believe it was like left center field, into almost hit the little gas pump at Minute Maid. That was just outstanding all the way around. And I just, right when I was like, this guy is going to be phenomenal. I knew about that heading into it, but I did not realize how much of an impact player he would be right from the jump, because this was a big moment for him.
Will he stick? Maybe not, and I'm not sure that it matters. Will he stick long term? Absolutely. But short term, let's discuss this. When it comes to players on the men, our good friend Brian McTaggart, MLB.com, has been covering the Astros for about 25 years. Yeah, he's pretty good. Tags saying that Jose Altuve, George Springer, Colin McHugh, and Aldemus Diaz are headed for a rehab assignment this week. In fact, McHugh threw a light bullpen session on Wednesday of this past week. And now I'm reading, Clint, where McTaggart says it's a possibility they could all rejoin the team just before the All-Star break in July if everything goes according to plan. And that's the reason I'm not quite sure that Yordan is going to stick this time up.
I have to agree with you. It's largely because of the fact that these guys are starting to get back on the come up. Of course, you're waiting to see what's going to happen with Carlos Correa and that rib injury.
It's true. His name wasn't in that report.
Yeah, his name wasn't in that report. He actually wound up, I think, talking to the media on Sunday, talking a little bit about that injury. He knew something was wrong well before kind of the whole masseuse incident, if you want to believe what was said.
No chance, that's what happened.
Exactly. But like I said, I feel like having all these guys coming back, especially when you look at the offensive side of the ball, that's going to leave Yordan Alvarez on the outside looking in, at least on this go-round. I could wind up probably seeing him pop up once we get past the All-Star break and closer to the postseason. I would hope so, at least. If not, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be there 2020 most definitely.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I think I could almost see I'll make a bold prediction. I could see a future where he is the biggest name in the Astros spring training camp over in Fort Walton Beach next, like, February and early March. And by the time they break camp, everyone's going to be saying, holy hell, Yordan looks yoked. He's ready to go. Because, look, there are levels to things. We say that on the show all the time. Kyle Tucker, I believe, was, like, the player of the month in their specific league.
Yeah.
And if you look at his numbers side by side with Yordan just for this season, it's laughable. Yordan Alvarez has lapped him with the power, with almost everything. So he looks about as ready as you can get. But again, sometimes these clubs like to let a player dip a toe in. But when they're winning a lot and they're expected to win a lot, it may not always be the long-term plan to keep him there. I think that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah, it's also largely because of these injuries. If it wasn't for all these injuries, I feel like Yordan Alvarez would have been toiling in AAA for a little bit longer. And again, like maybe get called up after the All-Star break when all these other like young pups that are just on the cusp of the big show, they're the ones that are going to wind up getting called up at, like, let's say, August, September.
Strohs are off today, and they have a quick two-game set against the Brewers, and that's an offense that can make you pay if you mess around and you give them a little too much. That Milwaukee offense led by Christian Yelich, pretty darn potent.
They really are. It's just amazing to see what Christian Yelich is able to do. He was an MVP last year. You're wondering if he was able to continue to do that in 2019. He's definitely living up to the hype. That team all the way around looks really good. They can wind up tripping up a Astros rotation that is not necessarily setting the world on fire. Even when Gerrit Cole on Friday night, he threw, I believe, 12 or 14 strikeouts. I can't necessarily remember exactly how much.
And they lost.
No, they won that one.
Okay, Friday was a win. I thought it was another Cole special where he racked up double-digit strikeouts and they lost.
No, they won. No, it was Saturday. They lost. Right. I believe it was a shutout. And that was a quick game, too, by the way, on Saturday.
You know, when you look at it, it'll be Brewers in Houston for a quick two-game set. And tomorrow, your starters, Brad Peacock against Peralta for the Brewers. That definitely is a matchup in favor of the home team there. But you want to see Peacock keep doing what he's doing. Wednesday should be interesting. Brandon Woodruff against Justin Verlander. JV is the Cy Young front runner. We all understand that. Brandon Woodruff for the season, 8-1 record, 90 Ks to 20 walks. So he's been getting it done as well. This will be a nice little test without everybody still fully healthy. We'll see exactly what these Strohs can do. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Very shortly, we'll take our second hour break when we begin. Hour number three, Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune, at least for a little while. Our guy's going to be finding another job sooner than later, and hopefully more people hearing him on shows like this lead to that next great opportunity. He's absolutely fantastic. You probably have heard him on the Jordy Holtberg Show. Excited to chat with my guy Lopes on the other side of this break. We'll go in on the Pels, Anthony Davis, these ideas that AD knows that he wants to land in either New York or L.A. So what? Does that impact any of these negotiations? I can't imagine it does. But what will be significant is what Adrian Wojnarowski of the Mothership reported today. David Griffin is telling people he's looking for multi-team trades. I think the translation there is give me all your assets. I mean all of them, not just yours. Go out and find me more from somebody else and then give me all those. So I'll see if I'm interpreting that correctly. He'll be my David Griffin translator, Andrew Lopez, straight up 6 o'clock. Then a Q&A replay. RP3 had less miles on the program this morning. Got to make sure we bring that to our afternoon crowd as you go shuffling home on this Monday, June the 10th. We'll be right back in. Ben and Clint, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports. And we're live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll. This is hour three of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love, Clint Domingue taking you home on this Monday, June the 10th on 1037 The Game. And we're taking you about 2 hours removed to game five of the NBA Finals. We'll touch more on that in this hour. But speaking on the hardwood side of things, I want to get the latest on Anthony Davis, more specifically Plan Z, and what David Griffin has in store to replenish the brow. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline He is Andrew Lopez, NOAA.com and the Times-Picayune for a little while, and then somebody very lucky for a long while. How are you, Andrew?
I'm pretty good, man. Just watching the competitive Anthony Davis news tweets just kind of come out today. Woj sending bombs, and then Shams trying to send bombs the other way. It's been fun to watch all day, man.
And I've loved watching you kind of play in the middle ground there. Let's go to the Woj mini bomb first. I would imagine this idea of requiring a multi-team trade means not any of the individual teams has every bit of assets, some combination of picks and current players that Griffin desires?
Pretty much. I do think there is one team out there that could, if they wanted to, end this right now, and that's the Boston Celtics. If they put Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, and the future picks on the table, I think they could just say, okay, we win. Everybody else go home. They are afraid to lose Kyrie Irving. They want to still put a competitive team on the floor next year. They don't want to completely gut their team just for AD. So they are kind of standing back a little bit on that. But outside of that, I think it's you're going to need another team here. And who that is remains to be seen. If it's the Lakers, you know, maybe Lonzo Ball doesn't come to New Orleans. Maybe Lonzo gets flipped someplace else. Or maybe it's, you know, Brandon Ingram gets flipped someplace else. However you see it, there seems to be another team to get involved. And that's kind of been what people have thought regarding the Lakers from the jump. But now it seems like the Knicks may have to do the same thing as well.
So if I follow up on that, am I also interpreting this correctly as maybe it's kind of a through the news way of Griffin applying some pressure and some time sensitive pressure on Danny Ainge?
A little bit. And I think that's definitely where one side of this is going. And then you saw Shams kind of come back out with, you know, AD's two preferred destinations now are the Lakers and the Knicks. That came out maybe about 30 minutes ago or so. That's kind of, you know, Rich Paul kind of firing back a little bit. So they're kind of playing with each other in the media right now, trying to figure out what's what and where everybody's going to go. But I still anticipate this deal getting done early next week. I think they, you know, the Pels do want to have a chance to see if they do get the number three pick, if they do get the number four pick, or maybe a later pick in that top 10 by virtue of another team. They want to meet with those guys, and those deals would have to happen next week.
Talking Pels and NBA with Andrew Lopez on 103.7 The Game. Are you more inclined to think that there's a specific player that they want out of this? I think we know that if it's the Celtics, it's Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
But when you look at the rest of these teams, I hear people say that David Griffin, during the draft process, fell in love with Brandon Ingram. But I'll let you corroborate that and maybe throw other players out there that you know are of certain interest.
You know, Tatum is the guy right now. If it is Boston, I know they want at least Tatum and Marcus Smart. They feel like that would give them a solid core to build around, you know, with Zion and Drew. There are some like Zion. I mean, I'm sorry, who like Brandon Ingram. There are some that like Lonzo Ball within the organization. To me, it does feel like right now, at least, that if you're going to go that route, to me, it seems like Ingram would be the guy who you think you could get the most out of. He's still developing. His body is, you know, everything with a blood clot seems to be okay right there. So to me, that could be the other guy, but it could be somebody else on a different team. Maybe it's, you know, Bradley Beal, and you want the Lakers to facilitate a deal with the Wizards to where Bradley Beal comes to New Orleans. So there's some things that you can try to do there, but I think it might be Ingram as the other guy that he likes maybe the most. But I think if we're sitting back and looking at all teams, it's still Jason Tatum.
The deal that Brooklyn did with the Hawks on Friday, was that solely about landing Kyrie Irving, or could that be part of a bigger play for Kyrie and AD in Brooklyn?
It could be, but to me, then that takes away some of their future assets. Obviously, they could have dealt that 17 pick. They could still deal 27 and maybe some future picks, but they would have maybe the, I don't want to say the biggest haul of prospects that you could get of young players, but if you could get D'Angelo Russell, Jared Allen, and Caris LeVert out of them, to me that would be hard to beat. Now, obviously, if they got D'Angelo Russell, he would have to agree to a sign and trade. He would have to want to come to New Orleans. there's no indication that he does or that he would want to help facilitate the trade in that matter. But there is a part of me that feels like it would be kind of funny to me if, you know, the deal that brought AD, that got AD out of New Orleans, featured D'Angelo Russell and didn't involve the Lakers at all.
What's the percentage chance that we get to Thursday morning of next week, day of the NBA draft, and Davis is still a member of the Pelicans?
I'm going to say probably like 30%, and I say that because of this. It's a little twofold. I think it will at least be agreed upon. There is the outside chance, especially if it's Boston, that deal cannot happen until July 1st because of Kyrie has to opt out of his contract. It can be agreed upon if it's Boston, but outside of that, I think they want to get this deal done.
So hold on, a quick kind of interjection there. If that's the case, would Boston in effect be drafting for New Orleans that night?
Yes, with
the agreed upon pick.
That's how it would have to work. Yeah, okay. That's how it would have to work. Those deals would then could be there's a couple of ways that could go. Those picks could sign, and then they'd be used in a trade 30 days after. That's how they got the Andrew Wiggins deal done in Cleveland for David Griffin when they traded the number one pick after they drafted him and ended up with Kevin Love to help, you know, build a team around LeBron. Or they could agree upon it a different way and trade him before. But Boston would essentially, in that scenario, be picking for the Pelicans that night.
Great information from Andrew Lopez. Another few moments here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Pelicans today hired Swin Cash. Your understanding of her background post-playing days, I know it hadn't been too long. She just retired in 2016. But what she's been up to since then and what she can bring to the table in New Orleans.
She's been working with New York Liberty since then and also in the business world a little bit. But I was told today, I mean, she's held in very high regard in NBA circles. I was told today by a source that they feel that she will end up being the first female general manager in the NBA.
Wow.
They think that highly of her. And it's just another nailed hire by David Griffin. He was able to go out there and get, you know, who he wanted. And it's a diverse hire. It's a little bit of an outside the box one. And by all accounts, it seems right now that, you know, it's again one of those things that has just been praised. I don't think he's had a move yet that anybody has really been like, I don't get that or I don't understand that. So it just continues the winning streak by David Griffin.
I'll switch to the NBA Finals. How surprised are you with the result we have so far, 3-1 Toronto?
A little bit. I thought it would at least still be 2-2 probably. Not having Clay for that one game hurt. Not having KD at all has hurt. But, you know, it's hard to feel bad for the Warriors when they could lose a finals on injury based on how they won their first one. So, to me, it's kind of fitting. I think Kawhi is kind of cementing himself as a top two NBA player. And I think even with KD back tonight that they go ahead and end it tonight. I don't think anybody wants to go back to Oakland.
Is it wild to consider that Kawhi could lead this franchise to its first ever championship and then not be there next year? Isn't that just wild?
It's crazy, and it also, to me, makes me think that at the same time, somebody could take a chance on Anthony Davis next year that we're not even talking about right now, only because they see what Kawhi just did. Kawhi leads his team to a championship and leaves. Is that worth it? Is that worth giving up prospects to get a title? Maybe it is. So I think that's another case for people to kind of have to look at.
It's always fun doing this. I appreciate you coming aboard on a Monday. Between now and next Thursday, your life's going to be bonkers. So, again, we'll catch up, I'm sure, sooner than later.
No, man. Hey, congrats to you for your win yesterday, too, man.
I appreciate that. Look at that. Comes on the show, shows all kind of love and respect, and dishes out all the intel. He really is one of the absolute best doing it. So our thanks again to Andrew Lopez. Clint, here we are, and it is 12, almost 13 minutes after 6 o'clock. Have I regretted? Have I neglected to mention that so far on the show? 2 hours and 12 minutes in?
I think you might have buried the lead there, Ben.
Forgot about that. Myself, Blaine Viator, yesterday pulled home a first place award, best broadcast team, high school sports for 2018. And that's due to our work on Karen Crow Football, Z105.9. This will be our fourth year working together, doing those Crow Bears games. They're an awful lot of fun. The recognition is cool. I give a lot of the credit to him because, dude, is as Karen Crow gets. Yeah. The people there love him. I just know how to talk, and we have a lot of fun.
And he's a wealth of information as well when it comes to Carrick football. Following that program for so long, he knows a lot about what's going on. And it's great to kind of see y'all both get it. Y'all both deserve it. Great stuff.
Yeah, man. And it's been a lot of fun. And, of course, this is your alma mater, so
yep.
Special connection that you've got there. And I don't know if there is a Triple Crown, but we'll try to win it. B2BS, best sports show in 2018. Carrick broadcast for football, best in 2018. Of course, the other way to look at that is keep thinking of Eddie Murphy Raw. Ben, what have you done for me lately? You keep winning these awards for 2018. It's 2019, bro. Up your game a little bit. What are you going to do next?
Be inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame? I don't know.
Dog, that was rhetorical. And, all right, there's no answer, but it is time for a break. We're coming right back. We'll take your phone call, 706-0111. Don't forget, Q&A replay, RP3 with Les Miles at 6:30. Bumper to Bumper Sports coming back at you on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back in, ready to roll with more B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. The mic is down. Got an update for us?
No, like I said, I just wanted to kind of keep myself available for this segment in case you wanted to talk a little bit of them. Well, actually, I do have an update.
See? I knew before you knew. Hit us.
Arkansas official heading to Omaha. That's the big update there. I believe the final was 14-1. This is why we need mercy rules in college baseball, Ben.
A shellacking. All right, so now we've got your field of eight finalized. For many of you, LSU's not in it. You don't care. But that's not everybody. There are legit college baseball fans within the sound of my voice, not just LSU fans. And so here's your eight. On one half of the bracket, Michigan will take on Texas Tech. Florida State will take on Arkansas. On the other half of the bracket, Vandy versus Louisville. How about that for a first-round matchup? And Mississippi State versus upstart Auburn. SEC with four teams in, ACC two, Big Ten, Big 12 with one apiece. So there's the makeup of your 2019 College World Series. Anything interesting you took away from the conversation with Andrew Lopez? This idea that it's going to take two teams to get it done? Not a doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
That's a very, incredibly non-subtle reminder to Boston, you know what? We're going to go find this thing somewhere else if you're not ready. But if you want to get down, put your cards on the table. Even if it means, as Andrew said, you make our pick for us and all these things are understood, it's not unprecedented. It's not even unprecedented for David Griffin.
It really isn't. And I guess just the fact you're having to work with two different teams, it feels like that should have been kind of the MO from Jump Street when you think about it. Because at the end of the day, you're not going to get everything you want out of, let's say, the Los Angeles Lakers or the New York Knicks. Using these two as pure examples, could very well be the Los Angeles Clippers or the Brooklyn Nets, something along those lines. You weren't going to get everything you wanted just from one player. One team, I should say. You would love that, but it just seems really tough to wind up pulling off when you look at what kind of is offered at the table, especially when you look specifically at where everybody is starting to look at the Los Angeles Lakers, because honestly, we've talked about it. Who wants Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, and some other Brandon Ingram.
Well, it seems like they may be more interested in Ingram Ball than I realized, and it wouldn't be my preference. It's been easy to sling mud at L.A., so I've joined in on some of that. But from a strictly basketball perspective, yeah, I get the tools that made Brandon Ingram, what was he, the number two overall pick out of Duke? I get what made Lonzo Ball a top three pick. I understand all of it. But the Jason Kidd comparisons for Lonzo Ball don't quite hold water for me, and I just don't know certain things yet about Brandon Ingram. I feel a lot better in what I know about Jason Tatum. The Kevin Knox thing has been pushed aside. We'll find out. But ultimately, it does appear that some combination of like Knox and Dennis Smith Jr. from the Knicks isn't going to get it done. Some of these guys that you mentioned from L.A., ditto. Clippers, we'll see. Nets, They just got some more assets with the recent trade they made. But is it enough, or are they just trying to land Kyrie? I think that's the big goal for Brooklyn, is Team Kyrie with D'Angelo Russell, and we'll see what happens from there. So I do think it's going to take multiple teams. Sticking with the NBA, I know you're going to talk later this hour. The most surprising part of the NBA Finals so far, and it's led to a 3-1 Toronto lead over Golden State. You think they close it out tonight?
I'm starting to lean towards yes. Thursday, I talked about it. I felt like the Golden State Warriors were going to rally back and try and get things going again, because it just felt like you have Klay Thompson back, and if Klay Thompson's even probably about 45-50% like at his best game, I think it winds up helping them out a lot. But I think we learned this Toronto team is on another level. We're seeing them just work on a different mode. And also, now that you're in Jurassic Park, if this was still in Oracle Arena,
right,
I would probably lean towards this going Golden State. But it's the fact they're in Toronto.
What I feel pretty certain about is this. If it gets past tonight, we'll be back in Toronto.
Okay.
If it gets past tonight, this thing will see Game 7.
And I'd be fine with that. I'm sure the NBA would absolutely love that.
I think you're looking at a Game 5 win, and I know this is a bit of bet hedging. I'm just taking one option off the table. I don't see a scenario in which Golden State wins tonight and the Raptors close this thing out on the road in Oracle. So I think it's either Toronto at home in 5 or Toronto at home in 7. I do think they are going to win the 2019 Larry O'Brien Trophy. The odds are obviously very much so in their favor. And the biggest storyline that maybe we haven't talked about on this show, the individual brilliance of Kawhi, the emergence of Pascal Siakam, and then there's the thing we're not talking about. Not long ago, within the last, 24, 28 months, they chopped the head off of the snake with that franchise.
Yep.
Best player, best coach. This ain't happening in very many circles, not just the NBA, but in professional sports these days. Best player, boom, DeMar DeRozan, gone. Head coach of a team that, if I'm not mistaken, was a number one seed, maybe 2 out of 3 years in the Eastern Conference.
He was coach of the year.
Yeah, Dwayne Casey.
Yeah.
Fired him. Best player, coach on a successful team. And yet we're seeing them get to a level that was unforeseen prior. And so while we're heaping a lot of the praise, and we should be, on Kawhi, Nick Nurse right now is just doing wonders.
It's amazing to see what kind of a difference it is to have a fresh new face all the way around. You brought it up perfectly. DeMar DeRozan's gone, Dwayne Casey out, Nick Nurse in, Kawhi Leonard in. Now the big question is going forward is, does Kawhi Leonard stay beyond, like, after the season? Because, of course, I think he's definitely always going to be looking outside of Toronto. He's going to probably go look towards Los Angeles. But will he wind up sticking around, especially after winning that Larry O'Brien Trophy?
We're seeing something right now that's in play in the NBA that is huge in, I mean, any form of sales, but especially like car sales. Clint, what's the best way to get somebody to buy a car?
You be telling this is the best one in the lot, man. You tell them, you basically try and sell them everything about it. Okay.
I'm going to help you out.
All right.
Get them to test drive the car.
Okay, yeah, there we go.
The best way to sell somebody a car is get them to test drive the car. So you are not wrong. You can talk about the benefits, and here's my connection to the NBA. Not wrong to tell somebody, hey, we got a nice lifestyle in Toronto. You're going to live a cush lifestyle. You'll be a god here. We're winning games already. It's not bad to tell people things, but then put their backside in the plush leather interior. Let them see what it feels like to get in and take the reins of the vehicle and drive it around a little bit. Hey, you want to take it home and drive it for a weekend? That's fine. You could do that too. Make it yours. Make the experience yours. Right now, we're about to see potentially 2 consecutive years where guys that we thought were on one-year benders take the test drive, like it, and then buy the damn car. It happened in Oklahoma City with Paul George. I think we might be seeing. How do you leave if you win a championship?
That's the weirdest thing of it all. Like, how does that happen? Like, you have somebody just up and bounce. I'm sure it's happened before in many other sports.
And that's what I'm saying right now. I don't think it will. I think if they close this thing out, whether it takes 5, 6, or 7 games, I think Kawhi's going to stick around. Why wouldn't you?
Now, of course, that kind of lends the other question. What happens if we see a la Warriors from a few years ago and they blow the 3-1 lead and they don't win the Larry O'Brien Trophy? Does that change things for Kawhi Leonard, because again, you
know, changes things for both of these franchises. Changes things for the people playing for the Warriors and Kawhi and the Toronto Raptors.
I'm just wondering, like, it makes sense to kind of say it changes a lot of things for the Raptors, but how does it change things for the Warriors? I'm just genuinely curious about this because it feels like to me, Kevin Durant's already 1 foot out the door. I feel like the core nucleus is going to stick around, but outside that, who's gonna bounce if they wind up winning the Larry Bryant Trophy?
Well,
because I think KD's 1 foot out the door.
Yeah, it's been suggested that Dre is more susceptible to trade than Clay.
Yeah,
I could see one of those guys. I could see that.
I think it'd be more Draymond than Clay, right? Because I feel like, again, we talked about it last week about the fact that I feel like you've got Clay Thompson and Steph Curry, the Splash Brothers. I feel like if you take one of those out, it winds up changing the whole dynamic of the team.
Oh, there's no question. Doesn't mean that you can't backfill and make them an incredibly competitive and successful team, but yeah, it would change them a lot. So I'm going to say that we get a Golden State win tonight. I'm going to say that they win one for the Gipper with KD coming back. And I'll say that we get to a game 7 and Toronto takes it home north of the border in that decisive game. But it's going to be a very interesting offseason, and many want to talk about it during the finals. That's part of what's detracted from this series in general. But it is high theater, and there's no denying it. All right, high theater over this weekend in Natchitoches. The 2019 Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame class was inducted. Les Miles was in that group. RP3 caught up with the hat. We're going to replay that interview for you on the other side of this break. Don't go anywhere. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming back at you on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Big time show so far. And we got more to go. And speaking of big time, look, when you scale the mountain and you get to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, you done something right, to be certain. And I got to give a lot of credit. Our morning host scooped a really, really good interview. Going to have to run that back for you. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we are right back in on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love and the famous Clint D, a little bit less than 30 minutes to go. And let's let the cat right out of the bag. Earlier today, Raymond Parse III, our guy with RP3 and company, unleashed an interview with the hat. I know a lot of you want to call him the Mad Hatter. I never really bought into that. The man, to me, is the hat. And of course, we're talking Les Miles. He went into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame this weekend. RP3 was in tow the entire time. Was able to track down Les. And here's a one-on-one that he aired from their sit-down live from the museum, the Sports Hall of Fame Museum in Natchitoches. It was really good this morning for the afternoon, borderline evening crowd. Get this in your life.
Coach, I know you expressed how appreciative you are about being inducted into the Sports Hall of Fame when you found out late last year during the fall. But what is it like now being here in Natchitoches and you're going to be taking the stage tomorrow and being enshrined as one of the greats in Louisiana history?
Well, it's certainly it's an honor, and I'm extremely humbled. But I'm really here to thank and those men that played great and did all the things we asked them to do and worked hard with a smile on their face. The assistant coaches that did everything they could to have great game plans. And I'm really just here to say I did, but I represented a larger number of men than me. And they did great, and I'm proud of them. And I'm glad to be a part of the Sports Hall of Fame, and I'm glad to have been the head coach at LSU.
You come into a situation where you're taking over a program that won a national championship a couple years prior. You know, a lot of expectations. You know the LSU fandom is immense. They love that purple and gold. But you came in, you had success right off the bat. You win a national championship in year 3. You know, when you took that job, did you think, yeah, we're going to be able to win a national championship in 3 years and we're going to compete for other ones? Did you think that as soon as you took the job all those years ago?
I always thought that we were going to win. It's the one failing that I have on the issue, certainly. I've never taken the field where I didn't feel like the team that I was with didn't have a great chance to have victory. And for that matter, deserve with their effort and energy in practice week to have victory. So, yeah, that's never been an issue with me. I always enjoyed taking the field with the Tigers because 82-5 and now over 100, about 103,000 people knew that, and it's the reason that they gathered in the stadium is to watch the Tigers whoop somebody's behind.
We're talking with soon-to-be enshrined Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer Les Miles, former LSU head football coach, national champion. Coach, let's talk about the first time you stepped onto the field inside Tiger Stadium, and that electricity is something, especially at nighttime, is something that it's hard to describe to people that haven't experienced it. What was it like for you when you were there inside Tiger Stadium that first time?
Well first, we go through a lengthy preparation for game week. Game week, we fasten it down. We make sure we're ready. And at that point in time, and we really haven't taken the field in the stadium. And when you take the field in Tiger Stadium, you go through what is a double bottom goalpost. Instead of one piece and you have to go around, you get to go right straight through. And you touch the wind bar and you open the door. And generally speaking, there's some ESPN guy who's saying, not now, not now, not now. And you have a football team behind you who's saying, right now, right now, right now, right now. And onto the field you go. The length and loudness of the cheer from the crowd is enough to bring, goosebumps to the back of your neck. And you smile because you've done everything that you can to that point to be perfect. And now we're going to play games. Now we're going to have plays. And then now your job then starts. So when I took the field, I was ecstatic that crowd was just happy as they could be with these Tigers.
One of your former Tigers I have on, a guest on my show quite a bit, Marlon Favorite. And I talked to him on my show the other day, and he spoke so highly of you. And I said, you were recruited by Coach Saban. He's known as this demonstrative, get after you, just going to work you to death. And then Coach Miles, he's a player's coach. He's a tough-nosed guy, former lineman, but he's a tough-nosed guy. And Marlon said this, Coach, he's like, the coach worked us. The practice we had under Coach Miles was some of the toughest I've ever had in my entire life. You think people are how much satisfaction do you get from that when someone like that who went on to play in the NFL still remembers and respects you for the kind of the preparation?
Yeah, I think there's a number of guys, Marlon Favorite, would recognize that we worked hard. I think that there's a comfort with our preparation when a player like Marlon Favorite can look back and go, we're ready. I mean, we practice our butt off this week. We're ready to take the field. I enjoy that. And it's right and it's true. I wanted to make sure that the situations that I had to prepare for were prepared for.
He also shared a story about the Sugar Bowl against Notre Dame, and that he displayed his rap skills, and you apparently displayed some of your dance moves during that, and even knew some of the lyrics of the song. Can you reflect back on that for us, Coach?
I've always enjoyed a little bit of rap and what is current music from the guys that I coach, and occasionally I can let my hair down and laugh and be a part.
Let's talk a little about having fun. Before you took the Kansas job, you're out there entertainment. The Dr. Pepper campaign during the national championship earned rave reviews. People loved it. I got to ask you, where'd you come up with that laugh there at the end? And how much fun was that for you just to be able to, play make believe, so to speak?
I was just talking with Peyton Manning, and I said, I really enjoyed commercials and trying to act and trying to display a story. And I don't mind if I'm made to look naive or a little, you know, left of center in something along those lines, because it's part of the story that's being told. So I had a blast. And, yeah, I apologize still to anybody that had to watch the Super Bowl or the national championship game with seeing me, you know, in some role. So it was fun.
We'll wrap it up with this, Coach. Obviously, you're about to enter your first season there with the Jayhawks. You're taking over a program. There seems to be a lot of buzz building about a lot of excitement. Just how excited are you to be back out there this fall on the sidelines once again, coaching young men?
It's always been a joy for me to take the field with a team. And I look to the right, and I can remember, you know, the offensive line lined up right to my right. And I look to the left, and I remember Glenn Dorsey, the defensive line, lined right to my left. And when we took the field, as a unit, as a team, that we weren't going to let anything in the perimeter distract us from playing great championship football. I think that pursuit of practice is being fulfilled now. I think it's the one thing that I wanted to get that I couldn't get in acting or theater or whatever I did that was not football. Football has a special lure to me, maybe because of the guys that coached me, Bo Schembechler, Bill McCartney was a mentor. Maybe it's those guys. But I like being on a practice field and making a team better.
Coach, appreciate you making the time out for us. Congratulations once again.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Told you. You were going to enjoy that. And by all accounts, as we head toward our final break in the program, by all accounts, Les, Kathy, the Miles family, sincerely enjoyed all of the plaudits and loved everything that came their way over in Natchitoches. And it was a banner class. I mean, to sell out as early as they did that nighttime event on Saturday. I was not there. I've been to three or four of those events in my past. They're always done right. This, by all accounts, was done on the biggest stage yet. For, you know, fitting, I guess you would say, for a Manning and a Miles and the caliber of inductees that they had. So this was done on grand scale because it needed to be. And really cool to watch Les receive that honor. Again, I think Scooter Hobbs put it well. And I kind of parroted this on the program last week. Born in Ohio, a Michigan man, certainly through and through. And now he's really found his way into so many hearts in Louisiana. And I'll pair it once more as we do hit this break. I think it was said very well by Lynn Rollins this week that passed. It showed that I think a lot of things have passed water under the bridge style with Miles and LSU fans. Maybe some are out there holding on a little bit. My guess, however, is that many are happy for the man and his accomplishments. Good stuff with RP3. Glad we got to bring it to you. We're coming back one final time. The most surprising part of the NBA Finals so far. We'll bestow that knowledge upon you when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming down the home stretch on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
Time for us to reboot up at least once more. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love, Clint Domang, bringing you home on 103.7 The Game. That pun, you know it's intended. And it's intentional because I get to remind you about the weekly reboot podcast. It's already available for you. It's been there since early this morning. We had so much fun. We just had the Les Miles interview run. We talked about being in Natchitoches this weekend. RP3 with a dynamite interview. Former LSU coach Les Miles. Spent some time up there yesterday, as we mentioned, much, much earlier in the program. And it really continues to just be an incredible honor. Myself, Blaine Viator, best high school broadcast team for 2018, for our work on Cairncrow football on our sister station, Z1059. And after coming back south on 49, reflecting on that experience, I decided to cut an entire podcast
based off of it. No, not me throwing roses to myself. It's not a self pat on the back type of thing. This week's weekly reboot podcast is all about kind of the art of broadcasting live games and the things I enjoy the most about it, some of the ways that we try to do it. So yeah, it's a bit inside baseball this week, but whether you maybe want to do that one day or you're like me and you also just love listening to it and you're kind of a student of it, I think you'll dig it. So it's all about play-by-play, color analysis, sideline reporting, production in the back, how it all kind of works together, and some of my favorite ways to call a ball game, why it is so much fun for me to deliver it after spending so many years only consuming it. So check it out, the weekly reboot podcast, almost exactly 10 minutes this week. It's short. It's meant to be consumed on your break, lunch, whatever you got, commute in, and you can find it completely free on demand. Just tap or click on demand at 1037thegame.com or aboard our free mobile app. All right, enough of me. We try to do this at least once a week to keep up, if for no other reason, with the fame of the show that happens now once a week, Saturdays 10 a.m. to noon. It's called Under the Dome, and as we're close now to Game 5 of these really unpredictable NBA Finals, I want to Clint's thoughts. The most surprising part of the NBA Finals so far, so within 3-1 Toronto, that substantial lead for the North, what's been the most surprising part of it? CD, why don't you get down to business? I'm interested in what you got here.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
We're only about a few hours away from tip-off between the Golden State Warriors and the Toronto Raptors, Game 5. And I have to say, I talked about this a lot recently, but I feel like just bringing it back up. When you look at Pascal Siakam and what he's been able to do for this team in the finals. And before we kind of dive into that, let's go back in time about 5 years real quick. Let's go back and see what happened in the NBA Finals about 5 years ago around this time. And that was the fact that the Miami Heat dynasty was crumbling before our very eyes. And it was all because of an aging San Antonio Spurs team. We saw Tony Parker retire today. That's a big reason why I'm kind of thinking about this. Because one of the shining stars of that team, and definitely a breakout star, was without a doubt our guy Kawhi Leonard. 5 years later, the guy is still a monster in the association, but at that moment, you knew that this dude was a rising star. And why am I bringing all this up? Is the fact that Kawhi Leonard now, he's kind of that superstar. He's that mega star, and there's a guy right behind him that's definitely a breakout guy, and we've noticed it throughout this season, especially when it comes to Eastern Conference Finals, and more importantly, the Finals. And that is Pascal Siakam. I've seen a lot of comparisons, at least from my point of view, and parallels to what we've seen in Siakam in the playoffs, the NBA Finals, between him and Kawhi Leonard, whenever he was ending the Miami Heat dynasty in one fell swoop. The dude was phenomenal. So I think I'm kind of going into that a little bit, because what we're seeing from Siakam is definitely similar. This is like his third or fourth season in the league, and Game 1 was a real prime example of how crucial he has been in this Finals, with 32 points in Jurassic Park to start things off in Game 1. He definitely set the tone. He hadn't necessarily had as big of a game, but he's been crucial to help guys like Kawhi Leonard get things done offensively. I like what I've seen from him throughout this postseason. And he won't win the NBA Finals MVP award, but he definitely deserves a lot more love than he's gotten in a matchup that's been dominated in terms of headlines by Kevin Durant's calf injury, Steph Curry putting his team on his back like Greg Jennings and Madden, and of course, what's next for Kawhi Leonard with his free agency on the horizon. His team can win tonight. It'll be a great moment for Canada. Everyone will talk about the leadership role that Kawhi had throughout the season, and he definitely deserves the praise, but I don't want to forget about how instrumental Pascal Siakam has been throughout this postseason run alongside Kawhi, and I don't think he can be judged against what we've seen from other guys in the past. It's definitely going to be awesome to see Toronto hopefully hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy tonight in the Great White North.
Spicy P. Yeah, I knew you were a fan, and I don't think you're wrong either. What Pascal Siakam's done, pretty incredible. And you know what's funny? I always have this litmus test of how household is a guy. And maybe one of my new barometers on how to gauge it, show up to Twin Peaks and watch a game. And then if the people there are yelling about a guy, they know his full name, they're yelling his full name, that's pretty household. When we hosted the Game 3 watch party last Wednesday at Twin Peaks, there were guys out there yelling, Siakam. Pretty funny to me. And I know that he's got a funny type of name. And Maybe that's part of the joy. Almost sounded Mortal Kombat-esque, if you know what I'm talking about. Instead of finish him, Siakam. But they were enjoying it. This guy has certainly played his way into bigger and better things following this series. I don't know if it's going to finish tonight. I don't know. It certainly could. And the momentum is all in the corner of Toronto. But I kind of dig your rationale on maybe the most surprising aspect of how they got there. Everybody knows about Kawhi, Kyle Lowry, I think pretty well established in the league, Nick Nurse and what they've done with the coaching staff, changing things over, doing a complete 180 from Dwayne Casey and teams that were wildly successful in the regular season, didn't quite get over the hump in the postseason. That, to me, has also been a big storyline. But I'll throw one more log on the fire, then we got to get the heck out of here. We're almost to the finish line at 7 p.m. The lack of LeBron, LOL, a big deal in the Eastern Conference. So for me, it doesn't in any way, shape, or form diminish what Toronto is on the brink of accomplishing, but it must be noted, this is the first year, well, ever, that LeBron has not been in the Eastern Conference, and it's the first year in basically a decade where his Cavs, then Heat, then Cavs Redux teams 2.0 haven't had just a beeline to the NBA Finals. So good on Toronto for being able to take advantage of a little gap in LeBron programming. We've had some pretty darn good programming ourselves. Want to tip our cap to JD from hour number one, Jacques Doucet, Ruffin Rodrigue, Andrew Lopez, and you just heard a Q&A replay a few moments ago, RP3 with Les Miles. Pretty fun show. And a good way to start the week on a Monday. I know, nobody excited about LSU baseball coming to a close as swiftly and summarily as it did. But as I told you to lead the program off, you got today to do some griping and moaning about it. Tomorrow, when I hit you at 4 p.m., Clint and I take over the airwaves. It's all about football season 2K19. Think on that and enjoy your evening. For Clint, I am Ben Love. This has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.